Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and with me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Yeah, woo! And over there is Jerry. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
Ba-ba-boom! Ba-ba-boom!
You know there's a name for that song.
For the burlesque striptease song?
Yeah.
Is it called Baba Boom?
Dun, 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 dun. That's called The Stripper by David Rose, who also did the Little House on the Prairie thing.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
That was all about keeping your clothes on.
He's actually like one of my favorite dudes.
Yeah? Yeah.
Instrumental, easy listening stuff.
Oh, that's right.
You and he does like schmaltz. Soft rock versions of, he does instrumental, easy listening versions of soft rock songs.
So he makes soft rock softer?
Yeah.
Wow.
You can't even, it'd slip through your fingers.
Right.
You know? But yeah, The Stripper is what it's called. And I'm sure you've probably heard it at burlesque shows because we should come out and say, I've never been to one.
Yeah.
But you have.
Yeah. I went to one in New York City.
Yeah.
Kind of the home of burlesque.
Sure. It's certainly one of the capitals of neo-burlesque. New York and LA are where it started in the mid-90s.
And had a lot to do with where it started in the, you know, late 1800s and early 1900s.
You're right. That is absolutely true.
Yeah, I went to one. You know, it's fun. I like throwback stuff.
Yeah.
And I appreciate people trying to bring stuff back, you know, especially like really old school stuff, not like 80s, like clothing.
Are you referring to my Swatch?
No.
And what about my Ocean Pacific Windbreaker?
Wow. Didn't notice.
Yeah.
No, I love 80s clothing. I'm just saying, when I'm talking about bringing it back, I mean, like, you know, the pantaloons and that whole burlesque thing.
No, they definitely, they have totally, like, gone all in. And as a result, it's been successful. It's been a very successful burlesque revival.
Yeah, it's like a movement.
Yeah, you can throw a stone in America and you're going to hit a burlesque troupe.
Yeah.
Just throw it. Close your eyes and throw it. You don't even have to throw it well. It'll hit a burlesque trooper. And that's a pretty recent phenomenon, but it's kind of taken off like a rocket. But you're saying it's true to form, true to the original.
Yeah, the one I saw was very much so. It was, you know, sort of body and had some humor and, of course, striptease action, but not like, you know, the strip club type of thing.
It's supposed to be like kitschy, campy stripteases typically, right?
Yeah, like titillating and body, but not...
It's not like a strip club strip.
No.
Not at all.
It's like dancing and fun and, you know, it's a good time. People are laughing and having a good time.
Yeah.
Whereas strip clubs are kind of like scaring.
Yeah.
To me, they are at least.
Right. So, you know, stripping actually came out of burlesque and then just kind of went off on its own direction.
Yeah.
But it's still associated with burlesque. We'll get into this. Now.
Okay.
Let's talk about the history of this. I should say, Chuck, that if you look into burlesque, especially neo-burlesque, there's a real discussion about whether or not it's pro-feminist or counter-feminist, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
If you speak to a neo-burlesquer, read their words or writing or whatever, you're going to find that they most likely identify as feminist, or at the very least, with feminism. And that doesn't always jibe with how feminists think of them, though.
Yeah, and especially these days with the new stuff, they, you know, these are productions by women costuming by women, produced by women, performed by women.
Which follows
a lot of women in the audience.
Right. And then, so it's empowering for a lot of women. Like, that's part of the attraction of it is it's women doing their own thing and they're doing it and they're doing it.
Well, it's, you're right. There's a couple of schools of thought, period, about that. It's like, so does a woman take her clothes off for money? Is that exploiting her, or is that a woman who's very comfortable with her body and sexuality exploiting men for their dough?
Right. But you just said the magic word too, men. Like, it seems to be like the baseline argument is whether or not burlesque is for the male gaze or for woman empowerment.
Yeah. Well, I think when we look at the history, we'll see that it was generally run by men back in the day and now is more run by women.
Right, but originally it wasn't run by men. It was originally women producers back in the 19th century, and that's where you get the association of women doing this stuff on their own. That's a true throwback to the original founding of it.
So let's go back in time then.
Let's go to the history of burlesque. Let's go over to Great Britain where it started.
It's 1840, and here we are in England, and ladies are very well covered up.
Yeah, it's the Victorian era.
Like neck to ankle. And skin is not in fashion. And so to see a woman show a little skin, even if it's an ankle, is a very big deal.
Right. So imagine that if you went to a performance of a show and it was a kind of this weird satirical spoof of maybe a Greek comedy, but it was lampooning current cultural and political items.
Yeah.
But it was an all-female troupe, and the producer's name was a woman's name.
Right.
And the troupe was wearing tights. Their legs weren't covered.
Right.
That's what you call a cultural explosion. And
yeah.
People went nuts for it.
Yeah, they did. The word burlesque comes from the Italian burlesco, or even further back, burla, which means to ridicule. And basically it's what, like, these days we'd call satire.
Yeah.
They were spoofs. They would spoof, the upper class and spoof operas and plays and Shakespeare mm-hmm. and all those snotty snots
right.
that had hang-ups in the upper echelons of society. They would make fun of them.
Yeah. Like, you wore a monocle, you're gonna get skewered in a burlesque show.
Yeah.
And the burlesque show itself was lots of, song and dance and, musical numbers. But there were two aspects of it from the beginning that survived even to today.
Yeah.
There's humor to it, supposed to be funny.
Yep.
And there was nudity of some form. Both of those were found in the first burlesque shows.
Yeah, and depending on what nudity meant back then to
right.
today, like nudity could be
wearing tights.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
here's my knees.
Right, like faint. Prepare to faint.
Right.
Because yeah, this was the very buttoned up Victorian era. So it was a pretty big smash in Great Britain, and the earliest plays made enough money that they shipped over to America. And in America, there was the first one technically was called The Black Crook. And it was a very big success.
Yeah, The Black Crook, like I said, it was Broadway. It was the 1866 at this point. And they had pantaloons on, but the pantaloons only went down to their mid-thigh, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
So from
they're wearing shorts, in other words.
Yeah. Okay. You know, the big puffy
yeah.
pantaloons. From the mid-thigh down, they had nothing. They had no sleeves. They had the bodices with no sleeves,
mm-hmm.
which is another huge deal.
It sounds like exactly like the French illustration of like a can-can dancer.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Except more skin, probably.
Okay.
And then the reviewers that went nuts for it, like some of them went nuts in a bad way and called it like filth. But other ones said, you know, remarked about there were no clothes to speak of, but they had never seen something like it so amazing in their life.
Yeah, it was like just quite a spectacle.
Yeah.
And the reviewers that reviewed positively felt the ire and pressure of the puritanical sect, which was pretty loud back then.
Yeah.
And they changed their tune. So then you had nothing but bad reviews of these things. But they were loud bad reviews, and that just drew more audiences.
Yeah, but there were, like, noteworthy people were going to these shows early on, which was a big deal. It wasn't just it did go back underground, but at first, like, Mark Twain went to one called the Four British Blondes. It was a troupe. And he said, "The scenery and legs are everything. Girls, nothing but a wilderness of girls, stacked up pile on pile, away aloft to the dome of the theater, dressed with a meagerness that would make a parasol blush."
Yeah.
He can turn a phrase.
Sure. Yeah, well, Mark Twain, he was a great writer.
But another show came along after that, too, that was a really big deal, right?
This is technically, I don't know, I guess it was maybe the one that really, maybe the Black Crook proved that this thing could be lucrative. And then the one that followed, Ixion, was the first true burlesque show to arrive in the U.S.
Yeah, I think Black Crook was a little, it was a Broadway show that just titillated. And so people said, who was the lady?
Her name is Lydia Thompson. She was a burlesque producer.
I think she was like,
Ixion.
You guys want to be titillated?
Yeah, check this out.
Let's do it for real.
And she dropped a burlesque show on them. Which, now that we're talking about this, I just realized I have been to a burlesque show in Vegas.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was at one of the older casinos.
Circus Circus?
No, no. No.
Golden Nugget?
No, not that old. I can't remember, but it was called Jubilee. It was boring.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, the one I went to was in like a tiny little bar
right.
in New York.
So. This wasn't Neo. This was like straight up. I think it had been performed ever since the 60s or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, I kept waiting for them to stop in the middle and be like, "We're just kidding. Here's the real show." But they didn't. It was so strange. I think everyone should go see Jubilee and just, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
You know?
It sounds like one of those old Vegas shows.
Yeah. So Ixion comes along, and it's one of those Greek comedies updated to lampoon contemporary society and culture.
Yeah.
And people love it. And you said Mark Twain went to one of these things.
I bet he went to more than one.
That's really saying something, because originally burlesque in the 1840s was created for the lower classes and the middle classes to make fun of the upper classes.
Yeah.
When it comes to America, it's not just attracting the lower classes, it's attracting the middle classes, it's attracting upper class society, possibly in part because it's still making fun of the British.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if it would have been quite as well received by the upper classes in American society if they had come to make fun of America. But in very short order, within just a few years, Lydia Thompson's success with her production, which, by the way, netted grossed $6.6 million in 2012 dollars in its first season.
That's awesome.
It was like $370,000 in 1870 dollars. But based on her success, Americans started making their own very quickly.
Yeah, and it was in the 1880s, a short time later, that the male managers and producers kind of took over, because, of course, they were already doing, producing things, but they saw that there was definitely money to be made.
Right. They're like,
Lydia.
"Oh, hey, women, you guys are living the dream. You're doing your own thing. You're being empowered. No, we're taking over."
Yeah. But it was still to titillate, and to spoof, but, there was definitely a little more, attention paid to the striptease part of it.
Well, right. I mean, the showing the leg, the costuming, the just kind of just shimmying around on stage definitely started to come more toward the fore.
Yeah.
But the striptease hadn't been introduced yet. The first stripper was a woman named Little Egypt, who did the first public strip at the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago.
Yeah, what was it called?
The Hoochie Coochie.
Hoochie Coochie.
Seriously.
Yeah.
That caused quite a stir. It was still, you could find a striptease here or there, but it was underground still.
Yeah, like stag parties and stuff like that.
Right. So burlesque was still, you went to a burlesque show, you're going to be titillated, but still, it was the lampooning, the hilariousness of it. There were stand-up comics.
Yeah, well, things really changed when a producer named Michael Levitt?
Yeah.
Okay. When he started.
He sounds like a modern producer. Michael Levitt.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he kind of was. He claims he coined the term vaudeville. Although, if he claimed it, then it's probably not the case.
Right.
I made that up, see?
Yeah.
But when he started producing, he basically put it in a three-act format, like the, three-act minstrel shows of days before, with act one being, just an ensemble entertainment, skits, gags, jokes, fully dressed in formal clothing. Then act two, which was like a hodgepodge of comic skits and singing acts and things like that.
Yeah.
And then finally Act 3, which was what they called a burletta, which was a full one-act musical burlesque that's when they would usually like spoof Shakespeare or somebody.
Right. So that format became the format for all burlesque shows to follow. What was that, the 1880s?
Yeah.
Okay. And what he did was he took what was traditionally the burlesque show, which was this spoofy play, and condensed it into one act, the third act, and then added this other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So vaudeville and burlesque are kind of co-evolving at the same time. Apparently this man was patient zero. I hadn't heard that. But the vaudeville, for some reason, had a little more of a better reputation than burlesque.
Because they weren't taking their clothes off.
I guess so. But you found a lot of the same elements.
Yeah.
Especially stand-up comedy. And there were some really great legendary comics like Jackie Gleason and
Bob Hope.
Yeah, Red Skelton, W.C. Fields, Fanny Bryce, Funny Girl.
Yeah.
Who started out in burlesque, graduated to vaudeville, and then went on to TV. Just basically followed the media as it went. But some of those people, vaudeville looked down on burlesque. But they
Until
would
they
still
needed the money.
Exactly when they needed money, they would adopt the pseudonym and then
right.
go do a little burlesque tour because burlesque was a lot steadier income. It was virtually guaranteed income. Vaudeville was a little more respected, but burlesque was guaranteed work.
Yeah, and this writer named Herb Goldman wrote a book called Fanny Bryce, the Original Funny Girl, where he pretty much came out and said, like, by the time you got to vaudeville, you were seasoned. Burlesque was the proving ground if you wanted to get in show business.
Right. Yeah.
For ladies and men. Men were the comics at the time.
Typically.
Yeah.
And we can thank burlesque also for the word top banana and second banana.
Yeah.
That had to do with the comics in like a comedic group. The guy who was the straight man or whatever, like Mo, he would have been the top banana. And then Larry might have been second banana and Curly would have been third banana.
I thought you were talking about The Simpsons for a second.
No.
It's like Mo would be the top banana.
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't wonder who is the top banana in The Simpsons. I don't think they follow that schematic.
No, not at all.
God is.
So early 1900s, 1905, there began to be vaudeville-style circuits going around, sort of like a traveling circus.
Mm-hmm.
And they played in rotation, so they became known as wheels. And they had the Columbia Wheel on the eastern U.S., the Empire Wheel on the western U.S., the Mutual Wheel, which I'm not sure where that was.
Probably the Midwest.
Midwest.
Sure.
And then there was a fourth wheel called the Independent that actually went bankrupt because they were too dirty.
Oh, really?
They refused to change, so they would get shut down so much they just couldn't hang.
Yeah, and that was a thing that would happen with the burlesque house. And these wheels were basically just circuits that involved burlesque houses around, you know, a certain region.
Yeah.
And they were so established and these shows were so guaranteed to draw a crowd that these wheels were, they would last for 40 weeks.
Yeah.
So you get in a burlesque troupe and you had steady work for 40 weeks out of the year. That's your life. That's your livelihood. And, this went on for like 30 years like this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, think about it. In showbiz, there was for three decades a place where you could go and get steady work and basically make your career for your life.
Yeah. Especially as a woman at the time.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, well, we're in the 1900s, but from the 1880s forward, like you said, comedy was mainly, working class. And it kind of occurred to me that that laid the groundwork for sitcoms.
Oh, yeah.
Cause like,
not, All in the Family, Sanford
yeah,
and
like
Son.
Many, not most, but, well, maybe most sitcoms are kind of aimed toward, like, working class regular people.
Right. King of Queens.
Not everything's The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's kind of follows in the burlesque, tradition because they're making fun of the upper class.
Oh, that's true.
By insinuating somebody from the lower middle class
totally right.
into the upper class to point out all of the foibles of the rich.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I never really thought it. I was trying to rack my brain for sitcoms based on rich people and most of
Silver Spoons.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. But they kind of mocked them as well.
I don't remember Silver Spoons being mocky.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But think about it. Like,
maybe
almost all sitcoms involve the working class. MASH. Those were working class doctors. And, you know, like you took something from the upper class and put them in a battlefield. That's working class now.
King of Queens, Archie Bunker,
Jeffersons.
They were all sort of middle class to working class.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to sit around and watch funny rich people.
different strokes as rich people, but they pointed out the foibles a little bit too.
Two poor kids though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, we are smart dudes. We just cracked the sitcom enigma.
Yeah, everyone's like, we knew this.
Right.
So one of the big, parts of the comedy bits in burlesque was, wordplay. And this is where Abbott and Costello, even though Who's On First wasn't invented, in burlesque, it was definitely honed there.
Oh, I thought it was invented there.
No, that's where they, like, really got their stuff down.
Yeah.
But it was very often, a lot of intricate wordplay, misunderstood words. And I think we should do this bit, the Cohen and Cohen bit.
Okay.
Are you prepared to do that?
I am.
Okay.
I am. So, I'll be, you be the caller.
Okay.
And I will be the person who answers the
phone. All right. So I ring you up. Ring, ring, ring.
Hello, Cohen, 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 and Cohen.
Let me speak to Mr. Cohen.
Oh, he's dead these 6 years. We keep his name on the door out of respect.
Well, then let me speak to Mr. Cohen.
Well, he's on vacation.
Ah, well, then let me speak to Mr. Cohen.
He's out to lunch.
Ah, let me speak to Mr. Cohen.
Speaking.
Da-dunksh. That was pretty good.
That was real good. We didn't even practice that.
We should go on the road.
Yeah. Hey, let's do that.
Yeah?
Yeah, we should. What do you think about doing some sort of Stuff You Should Know tour?
I think we totally should. I mean, we already have done variety shows, and all we need is a striptease act, and we're burlesque.
Well, let's do a variety show or like maybe a trivia tour or something like that. Let's hit the road, man.
Did we just birth an idea?
I think so.
All right.
Okay.
People can be like, come to Minneapolis. Come to Kansas City.
Man, you better not be wearing monocles because you are going to feel the stink.
I think if we do tour, though, we should go to, you know.
Oh, like, all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, New York and L.A.
No, no, we'll do like a little tour.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll do the mutual circuit or the mutual wheel.
We'll do all three wheels.
So burlesque, developed to the point where they had their own language, basically.
Yeah.
Like many, you know, industries in the entertainment business.
I'll bet you can guess my favorite.
A jerk.
Yeah.
A jerk was an audience member.
Yeah.
A yuck was a big belly laugh.
Yeah. Think about it. The yucks that came from that.
Of course, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you make a funny face as a performer, that's a skull. A mountaineer was a brand new comic that apparently came from the Catskill circuit up in the mountains there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought this was interesting. The Boston version was a cleaned up version of the routine.
Yeah, because the sensibilities of Bostonites are famously touchy.
And then, you know, there's a whole list of vocabulary here, but we don't have to go through it all.
Yeah. But I mean, like some of the terms that we use, again, top banana, yucks, jerk, those came from burlesque.
Yeah.
The way to go, burlesque. So, there's like kind of this heyday. Burlesque is enjoying its first wave in the United States. And then all of a sudden they have big competition. It's called movies. And then worse than movies, talkies.
Yeah.
And burlesque is like, what can we do that the movies can't do to get people in.
To take off even more clothing.
Exactly. Strip.
Yeah.
And that actually did it. Because not only did that save burlesque and make it competitive against the movies, it actually kicked off the heyday. Once the burlesque performers started taking off their clothes and doing stripteases, like real stripteases, that's when burlesque saw its golden era.
Yeah, but again, these are 1920s stripteases, mm-hmm. So it's not like going to one of those filthy places these days.
Like a strip club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking Gypsy Rose Lee and Sally Rand doing like the fan dance where, you know, they're so good with that fan, you can never quite tell what's going on behind the fan.
I know. Have you seen a fan dance?
Oh, yeah.
They're like very, the keeping it placed and moving it as you move around on stage to cover yourself, that's art. I mean, that takes work.
No, of course it does.
Yeah.
Because if you show too much, you got busted.
Right. You gave your reveal too soon.
Yes. And by busted, we mean like the cops would put you in jail, perhaps.
Oh, I see what you mean. And that was actually like pretty common, apparently. Like the burlesque houses would be shut down. The person headlining would be arrested for corrupting moral sensibilities.
Yeah. There were these dudes, the Minsky brothers,
mm-hmm.
Abe, Billy, Herb, and Morton. And they were big time burlesque producers. And,
New York.
Yeah, they were raided a bunch. A raid in 1925 became famous because they wrote a book and made a movie about it. But,
what was it called?
The Night They Raided Minsky's.
No.
A little on the nose.
Yeah.
But, they said it just became popular because of the attention. Like, it was basically a cycle of, covering up too much, audience dwindles, revealing too much, audience booms, you get raided, so you start covering up again.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And it just kind of kept going like that. There was a law in New York that you could be topless at that point as long as you didn't move.
Supposedly that law is still in effect.
As long as you don't move?
I don't know about the as long as you don't move part, but you can legally walk around New York topless, man or woman, and not be breaking the law.
Really?
Yeah. So Splash was actually factually incorrect.
The movie Splash?
Yeah, although I think Daryl Hannah was like all the way naked when she comes out of the water the first time, remember?
Yeah.
They arrested her?
Yeah, I loved that movie when I was a kid.
It was a good one.
I thought it was pretty great.
The Minsky brothers were pretty infamous, so much so that Mayor LaGuardia at the time,
yeah,
who was a moral reformer.
He was the early Giuliani.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Like, let's clean this town up.
He made a law where you couldn't publicly advertise using the word burlesque or the word Minsky.
Yeah.
So, like, they were pretty infamous. They made the mayor of New York mad.
Well, they, I think, were the first ones to apparently, the first raid in 1917, there was a performer named Mae Dix who, as she was leaving stage, was accidentally, absentmindedly removing her clothing for the next act,
mm-hmm,
and just did it before she was off stage, and the dudes went nuts. So she turned around and went back out. And one of the, I think it was Billy Minsky, was like, hey, let's see if we can make that accident happen every night.
Oh, yeah? That was the beginning of the whole thing?
The beginning of, like, the full nudity, and that's what led to that first raid.
So let's go back to the strip teasers themselves.
Okay.
Like, you mentioned Gypsy Rose Lee and Sally Rand,
yeah,
whose names are still pretty well known,
oh, yeah,
in the popular culture. And the reason why is because these ladies were superstars. Like, they catapulted from their burlesque routines into, you know, starring roles in movies and in culture and society. They were written about. They were lauded. They were big deals. Like, they came about at a time, and burlesque stripteases came about at a time when a significant portion of society was ready to love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gypsy Rose Lee, too, she was a smart lady, and she didn't mind being smart on stage. She would perform these monologues that were very highbrow with a British accent, and or not a British accent, but like a, you know, a upper-class accent.
Like a finishing school accent is how Julia Layton puts it.
Yeah, and she would tell jokes, like really intellectual, smart jokes, and super witty, and she would do her striptease. It was the first time that the striptease and comedy were married.
Right.
In one, in, you know, at the same time.
Like, she would just kind of go around the stage and she'd come out in like all of these layers, petticoats,
yeah,
and all that stuff. And then she would just kind of tell jokes or make witty observations as she was slowly revealing these things. And then by the end of her act, she was, she had basically pasties on.
Yeah.
And it just wowed the crowd. And she, I want to see Gypsy. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, it was, I think, a Broadway show, too, wasn't it?
Right. I think it was her memoir.
Yeah.
It was a book, and then they made it into a Broadway show, and then they made it into a movie. And I think it was, it was Natalie Wood who played her in the movie. I want to see it, because she sounds like a pretty interesting person.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
And then one of her, probably the next biggest superstar of her exact era, which is the 30s, was Sally Rand. And you can thank Sally Rand for inventing the fan dance.
Yeah.
And the bubble dance. Those were her two big ones. She had a bunch of acts, but her two big acts were the fan dance was just two huge ostrich feathers.
Yeah.
That she used to cover up and just maneuver around. And then the bubble dance was like a 5-foot balloon that she just kind of rolled around.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and dudes were like, what's behind the balloon?
Right. Pop.
Yeah. So we'll continue on in the 1920s right after this message.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right, so we're kind of back to the 20s.
I thought we were in the 30s.
We're jumping around a little bit. A very cool thing happened in the 1920s with burlesque, which was it was no longer all white. It wasn't integrated, of course, at the time, but there started to be all black burlesque clubs, all Latin clubs, mm-hmm. all Chinese clubs, mm-hmm. and really kind of spread. Like I said, though, they weren't sharing the stage,
right?
But at least they were like representing their cultures.
All right.
By taking their clothes off for money.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, you said something a little while ago, before the break, that like the men were like, they wanted the balloon to pop.
Yeah.
With the advent of the striptease coming front and center in a burlesque show,
mm-hmm.
The male audience increased tremendously. The ratio of men to women in an audience really skewed toward men.
Yeah, it became more about the striptease and less about the comedy, I think.
Exactly. And so the audience became increasingly men and randy men.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why burlesque still today has a this kind of body implication to it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because at that point it kind of shifted some. It became a little less intelligent, a little less comedic, and then the strippers themselves were funny. They were trying to get yucks and stuff themselves.
Yeah.
But you'd also, you know, you'd have like a stand-up comedian and then a striptease. And that was what the burlesque show kind of evolved to during its heyday.
And that was sort of the beginning of the end because a lot of the comics moved on to, like you said, TV and film.
Right.
And took those acts with them. I mean, if you look at the comedy at the time, and still today, there are like elements of burlesque all over the place.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
But I mean, again, we're talking like burlesque had a heyday, like even more than its first wave from about the 20s to the 60s. And what's interesting is, that the women involved, like, Gypsy had a movie made about her.
Yeah.
Another one, who came a little later in the 50s, she was huge. Her name was, Blaze. Star.
Yeah.
With two R's, like Brenda Star.
Yeah.
and Blaze Star, have you ever seen that movie Blaze with Paul Newman and, Lolita Davidovich?
Yeah, was that?
That was about her.
Okay, I thought so.
And she did this, really well-known striptease where, there'd be like a settee and she would just kind of maneuver around it and everything and do her striptease and end up on it. And then smoke would come out and streamers would come down.
Smoke would come out from between her legs.
The one I saw, it didn't.
Oh, okay.
But it was for TV, so she may have altered it some.
Gotcha.
It looked like it was for TV.
Right.
But it was, I mean, pretty good stuff.
Yeah, Mae West, famous screen star. She started off in burlesque, and she's one of the early ladies to embrace her sexuality and say, hey, men, look at me.
Right.
I'm a sexy lady.
So it's extremely popular. It's about as mainstream as it can be. And then it's also kind of maybe hastening the sexual revolution along a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it basically is killed. It's eaten by its own offspring.
Yeah.
So the reason burlesque went away in the 60s was because access and availability of pornography became much more widespread around that time, and guys didn't need to go to burlesque shows any longer.
Yeah. I guess you could call it the natural progression of things that continues to this day. But, yeah, hardcore porn was available, and it really died out pretty quickly after that for a while.
Right.
Like for a solid, like, 40 years.
Yeah, and there was the one noteworthy throwback or aspect, revival of it, I guess. It was a 1979 Broadway show that was pretty successful. It had more than 1,200 performances.
Yeah.
It was called Sugar Babies, starring Mr. Mickey Rooney and Ms. Ann Miller.
Yeah, classic.
And it was a period piece, a backstage period piece set in the 1930s during the heyday of burlesque shows, and it was about a burlesque troupe and its performance.
Yeah, that was you know how things come back around and people become fascinated with the old stuff. That was like, the late 70s was the perfect time to revive a 1930s style thing, I think.
Sure.
It was a really big hit.
Well, yeah, and they were into the 50s then, too. Remember the greaser thing with Grease?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sha-na-na.
Yeah.
Performing at Woodstock.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yeah, it always baffled me until I sort of realized that, no, like 10 or 15 years after something's popular, people are into it again.
Mm-hmm.
Like Happy Days and Sha-na-na, that wasn't...
Happy Days.
That Little wasn't in Shirley. The 50s, yeah.
Good stuff. So, Chuck, right about here seems like another a good time for a break because we're about to go into the neo-burlesque revival.
Agreed.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Chuck,
yes.
We're back. So we say sometimes that, you know, something didn't really go away. It just went underground.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily the case with burlesque. I think it, like, went away. I think you would have been hard-pressed
sure.
to find a burlesque show in the United States.
In 1984.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the mid-90s, two different groups independently revived it. And there were two people who were basically at the heart of it. Billy Madley in New York and Michelle Carr in Los Angeles at about the same time in the 90s revived burlesque.
Yeah, and it certainly didn't hurt that people like Dita Von Teese were marrying Marilyn Manson and becoming internet famous for their throwback 1930s style.
Yeah.
But now you add tattoos to that equation.
Yeah.
Seems to be a lot of that.
Tattoos?
Yeah, with the burlesque scene now, the neo-burlesque scene.
Yeah. So let's talk about the neo-burlesque scene. You got to keep in mind that burlesque already had this, like I said, it's just kind of a bawdy reputation.
Yeah.
Because the striptease was introduced and pushed front and center. And so there's certainly an element to that. Like the striptease is definitely still part of the neo-burlesque scene.
Oh, yeah.
But, there's also, as Julia Layton points out, it's more, you could call a lot of it more performance art. Or there's certainly elements of performance art in the modern neo-burlesque, act.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Yeah, and they're also, with neo-burlesque, they are, shining the light on people who may have not been on stage before, like plus size women,
yep.
Or they would play with gender. There's a performer called world famous. I want to say B.O.B. or is it just Bob?
I think B.O.B.
Whenever you spell your name with an asterisk, capital B.O.B. and an asterisk, then yeah. You're kind of calling attention to it.
Yeah. And, B.O.B. was a former drag queen, even though she was a woman. So she called herself a female impersonator.
Yeah, so just basically messing with these conventions. There was a male performer named
Tigger.
Tigger with an exclamation point.
Yeah, he's still around.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I figured. And he had a very famous striptease routine where he would be a priest courting an altar boy. So they're definitely like pushing the boundaries still.
Oh yeah, and that definitely is the heart of burlesque as it was originally created. I mean, like it's satirical, it's biting. It's, it criticizes the powers that be.
Yeah.
There's one out there now. There's a, lady named Honey Wild who does a Margaret Thatcher routine.
I've heard of her.
And at one point there's a man, bent over and on his bottom is the word labor, you know, uh-huh. Of course with the U, like the Labor Party, and Margaret Thatcher spanking it with a riding crop.
Nice.
So this is like, it's burlesque. As it was originally conceived by the women in the 19th century who produced the earliest shows, but it's melded with the heyday from the 20s to the 60s.
Yeah.
Where there's striptease and there's different acts. There's comedy elements to stand-up comedy as well.
Yeah.
But it's also contemporized. So like you got Margaret Thatcher.
Sure. Well, fairly contemporized.
Right. It's more contemporized than say like Greek comedies.
Yeah.
And then, I saw one by the Devil's Playground Troupe. They do a Star Wars burlesque.
Oh, nice.
Complete with Slave Leia.
Of course.
Jabba the Hutt makes an appearance.
Really?
Very disturbingly.
Uh-huh.
There's like, stormtroopers. It's like, you know, I'm sure nerd heaven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're marrying several different things there.
Yeah, and you mentioned it when, like, you kind of see a lot of tattoo culture involved in this. It does seem like the neo-burlesque movement pulls in from a lot of different fields, like tattoo culture, feminist porn, the original burlesque stuff, performance art, drag
girls.
Queens, all these different cultures kind of come together and, are created, put into acts now, neo-burlesque acts.
Yeah, it's a cultural movement even more so than just a performance. You know, it's bigger than that now.
And Chuck, I said, this neo-burlesque, kind of incorporates, drag queen aspects to
sure.
the show. Like there are, the fluid gender, it makes an appearance a lot.
Yeah.
And that's kind of appropriate because drag clubs and drag queens and just drag acts definitely grew out of burlesque, either as a parody of burlesque or just from it as its own thing.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So it's had a huge cultural impact.
Yeah, the drag shows I've been to definitely just smacked of true burlesque.
Right. Camp out the yin-yang. and so it's kind of neat that neo-burlesque takes all of the things that burlesque spawned and just kind of brings it back together.
Yeah, I think burlesque is about acceptance. They're not a very exclusionary group.
That is neat. A neat way to put it. You just summed it up. So anytime you have a cultural movement, Chuck, that means that you are going to have cultural critics about it.
You
against
have some?
It. Well, no, I mean, we talked about the it running afoul of feminism.
Sure.
And I mean, that's certainly, I don't necessarily have a lot to speak to on that because I don't really know what the answer there is.
Right.
I've just seen, from what I've seen, it seems like the burlesque performers are like, you're not getting this. This is not about titillating men. If that's really what you think it is, go to more burlesque shows and you will see.
Right.
And feminist critics of burlesque say, it doesn't matter how you dress it up. You're still stripping and there's still men who are just, you know,
objectifying you.
Yeah. In the audience.
Yeah. But who wants to hear what two stupid middle-aged dudes have to say about it? I feel like we shouldn't even have an opinion.
Right, well, there you go. I think that's what I was trying to say.
I think you were.
This is more just bringing up, like, there's a discussion going on. And it, from that viewpoint, it doesn't seem like it could be rectified. It's more just like, enjoy it or don't, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
That's an opinion.
Well, I've already said I agree because I've gone to a show or two and it's fun.
Yeah, well, there you go.
The other thing that happens when there's a cultural movement going on is, you learn that you can make a little dough off of it because it's gone mainstream to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And if you live in a major city or maybe even a minor city, you likely have some sort of burlesque class or school situation going on there.
Right.
Atlanta's got a burlesque school. They're all over the place and basically just encouraging ladies to get out there and have a little fun. There's one teacher named Vivian Vavoom that says, she teaches a room full of librarians to bump and grind, and I bet it's a blast.
And that's another, those are two more words that we can thank for burlesque for.
Bump and grind.
Yep.
Those were original terms for part of the act, right?
Right. What's a grind is making a circle with your hips.
I wish people could see you.
And
right
bump
now.
Is moving your pelvis back and forth. Bump and grind.
Oh.
Came from burlesque.
If this were just a video podcast.
There's a burlesque performer named Michelle L'Amour, whose work is cited in the introduction of this article. She does something called Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
I watched it.
Where, it's pretty impressive. Where, she comes out in like a coat and tails and,
nothing else.
Pretty much, yeah. And, sits in front of a sheet music stand on like a nice piano bench.
Yeah, with her butt facing the audience.
Right. And then twerks to Beethoven's Fifth.
Yeah.
And she actually has an instructional DVD called, Booty Camp, I believe.
What is, twerk, is that a new word?
Booty
for,
Lab.
For an old thing?
The DVD's called Booty Lab.
Booty Lab?
No, it's a new thing. I don't think it's an old thing.
No, people have been twerking forever. They used to call it like, you know, backing that thing up or whatever. Like, twerking is not a new thing.
Are you sure? Because twerking is like doing individual cheeks.
Yeah, I'm positive.
Cheeks is another word that came out of burlesque as a euphemism for bottoms.
Yeah.
Cheeks.
No, it is definitely not new. Since there have been cheeks, cheeks have been manipulated for entertainment.
Okay, well then, yes, it's a new word for it.
Okay,
and it's there's some people who excel at it on the internet, like Carmel Kitten. Look her up.
Really?
She is hilarious.
Good
I guess
control.
In a way, she it's like superhuman.
Yeah,
she has preternatural control over her bottom muscles, her butt muscles. I keep saying bottom. Like, there's two-year-olds that listen to our podcast.
I feel like I have no control.
Well, you can work at it.
All right.
I can do it.
Yeah?
I can wiggle my ears, too, as you know, from the Natural Selection podcast. No, but check out Carmel Kitten. She's hilarious.
All right.
She twerks in random places, and then she'll say the place that she's twerking at as she's twerking.
Yeah.
So she'll be like, twerking in the library, twerking in the library. And like, when she does the twerking in the library, she looks at the camera and goes, she puts her finger up to her mouth while she's twerking.
Oh, she could probably make some money if she
I think
was
she's
like,
made a lot of money.
Twerking at Subway, twerking at McDonald's.
Oh, yeah. I think she's making it through YouTube ads, but yeah, she probably could.
You know?
She could replace Jared on Subway.
Boy, somebody needs to.
Why? What's wrong with Jared?
Well, that whole thing came out last week when he was defending them for putting,
that stuff in the bread?
Toxins in their bread.
Yeah.
But I mean, he kind of has to. He's a very rich man because of them.
And a very fit man. He's lean.
Good for him. He's still a nerd.
Well, sure, but he knows he is. He's Jared.
I'm not a fan.
Oh, of Jared?
Nope.
How do you dislike Jared?
That's
like disliking a friendly horse or something. You know, like, what the heck did the horse ever do to you?
He bugs me.
Jared?
Yep.
You are the first person I've ever met that didn't like Jared. Although I don't really talk about him a lot now that I think of it.
Yeah. If I saw Jared on the street, I would punch him in the face. And I'm a nonviolent person.
Well, Jared, steer clear of Chuck because you do something to him that he Watch don't like.
Man. Actually, I'd meet him and I'd go, oh, dude, can I get my picture made?
Oh, yeah. Put you do a selfie with Jared.
Yeah.
He's like, I heard what you said about me.
I doubt that.
So I guess that's burlesque. If you want to know more about it, again, throw a rock. Go talk to the person that it hit because it's probably a burlesque trooper.
Apologize.
And say, hey, where are you guys performing?
Yeah.
And go see a show. Support neo-burlesque. Unless you are critical of it. In which case, don't. Yeah, don't go.
Yeah.
And if you want to know more about burlesque, you can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And I have one more point. I was wondering, what's the difference between cabaret and burlesque?
I don't know.
They're virtually one and the same.
Well, which was first, burlesque?
I think they co-evolved, but I think burlesque was... Yes, I think burlesque was technically first.
Maybe cabaret was the French version.
No, it's not. I think the big difference is the cabaret is a little more focused on singing and dancing.
Oh, okay.
And like the band.
Gotcha.
But it's almost the exact same.
Burlesque was more about comedy and skits and pasties.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So I did say search bar a little while back, which means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this... Inquisition statements.
Sexy.
No, not sexy at all. Hey, guys, recently listened to the Inquisition show, and I had a story. I'm a Reformed Jew, and in my high school, my rabbi told me a story about visiting Spain. She was there on a scholarly trip of some kind and befriended a local Catholic woman. My rabbi eventually talked about Shabbat and the lighting of the candles and the prayers. The woman said she had a similar family tradition and invited my rabbi and her peers to dinner on Friday. Before dinner, she and her family went into the basement of the house and basically performed a Shabbat service. The prayers were Jewish prayers, though the woman performing the service didn't know that. All she knew was that on Friday, the family went to a hidden place that was sort of secret. After looking into it, they found research saying Spanish and Mexican crypto-Jews aren't uncommon. People who had converted during one of the Inquisitions but kept their traditions secretly, which we talked about.
Uh-huh.
This woman had no idea why she was doing what she did, but she continued to do it. And that is from Brittany, and she says, P.S., while I do love your show, everyone else in my life hates that I listen.
That's like we're Jerry to those people.
I recently visited the U.K. and went to Warwick Castle with my boyfriend.
Oh, yeah, we're despised at Warwick Castle.
They keep vultures there, and I would not shut up about defensive vomiting, sky burials, and old world and new world vultures. I'm surprised my boyfriend didn't lock me in the dungeon.
Huh.
So that is from Brittany.
Brittany, keep on keeping on, yo.
Yep.
You just keep on citing stuff you should know. Eventually, all these haters will fall away and cycle out of your life.
And you'll get a good boyfriend.
Exactly. if you want to tell us why your boyfriend or girlfriend stinks, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can join us on our YouTube channel. Just search Josh and Chuck. Send us an email to stuffpodcast@discovery.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/powersafely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.